You're watching Meet the Movie Press, and coming up, we're going to be talking about Wonder Woman 2, the Men in Black spinoff, and a little movie called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Meet the Movie Press.
I'm about to have a seizure.
I thought there was a fire alarm going on.
Obviously, if you're listening to a podcast, this means nothing to you if you're listening just audio. But if you're actually watching this show, the lights in the studio have just suddenly started flashing. I was expecting one of those girls with a card to come up and start going, round one!
Yeah, I feel like I'm being courted for, like, free agency. Like, I'm in Staples Center and the Lakers are, like, doing their pitch. Like, this could be you, your name on the Jumbotron.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Wow. They're going to have a kiss cam. Our budget's gone up. This is a good sign. This is a good sign.
Well, good morning, Simon.
Hey, how are you?
Do you know who I am? I'm Jeff Snyder.
Where are you from, Jeff?
Editor-in-chief of the Tracking Board, tracking-board.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @TheInSnyder. And with me, as always,
it's Simon Thompson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ShowbizSimon. There is also a Facebook page. This is Simon Thompson.
Guys, I saw Simon in action yesterday.
You did? Yeah. Simon, not sex.
No. Well, sex. I guess there's a few different definitions of inaction.
Yeah.
No, he interviewed me. You interviewed me for Al Jazeera.
Yeah.
Which I'm very excited about. Mm-hmm. I know I have a lot of fans.
You fucked it up.
Overseas, badly. Around the world. I know. It was
badly. It's embarrassing.
We met Melrose Larry.
We did.
Dude, I looked him up. He's famous.
He is famous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you were a very good interviewer.
Thank you so much.
Very gentle.
I felt almost like I do TV for a living.
We have a lot to talk about today.
We do. Wow, what a busy week this has been. There's something happening at the weekends. Can I just say happy Oscar weekend?
Yeah, we're going to get to some predictions at the end of the show, We'll wrap up the show with some predictions. I have my article going up later today.
Yep.
Who knows? It could change in between. I could change my mind on the drive home. That's how wide open this race is.
Who knows?
But I think for starters, we should just dive right on in.
Animus bouche.
What?
It's a little thing you have when you have dinner, like a posh dinner, like, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Chick-fil-A.
Posh. Yeah. That's what I say. Would you, honey, like to go to a posh dinner tonight?
I booked us a posh dinner at Chick-fil-A.
No, we have to talk about Wonder Woman 2.
We do.
Yeah, Wonder Woman 2. Okay, that's what we have to talk about. Kristen Wiig is being eyed to play the villain Cheetah. She is in early talks. I guess she has already come in for a meeting with Warner Brothers executives and Patty Jenkins, who handpicked her for the role after they offered it to Emma Stone, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Emma Stone passed.
Mm-hmm.
She has an Oscar. She just did those Spider-Man movies a few years ago. And I imagine that Emma Stone wants her own movie. You know, like, play, like, you know, her own superhero. I don't know if she'd be good for Silver and Black. But she was the girl in Amazing Spider-Man. She just wanted to come in and be the villain when everybody's cheering for Wonder Woman.
Yeah. It's just fair.
Yeah.
Totally.
So we have Kristen Wiig. What do you think about her as Cheetah? Good or bad?
First of all, I was quite surprised. If I was drawing up a list of five names, she would probably have not been on it. But then I thought, well, who did they have in the last one? And spoiler, in case you haven't seen Wonder Woman.
David Thewlis. Yeah. So,
so I'm kind of like, well, he kind of looked like a geography teacher. And he was, you know, he was a decent enough, not amazing, but decent enough considering it's DC villain. And I was actually thinking it might be quite nice. And there haven't been. We've had lots of guys fighting guys. We haven't had women fighting women. And there aren't actually that many female villains in that. Aside after sort of the Batman universe, there's a few in there. But generally, there aren't that many. I think it'd be a really nice, nice thing to do. I don't know much about the character of Cheetah, if I'm honest with you.
Nor do I.
But
sounds like a response to Black Panther. It's like, oh, let's get a
lady
get
cat.
A big cat in there.
Yeah. Let's not call a cat woman, but a woman cat.
I don't like it.
Okay. Does not surprise me.
I'm not a big fan of Kristen Wiig.
Mm-hmm. Outside
of studio comedies.
Yeah.
I really like the Skeleton Twins, and you know, she was okay in Diary of a Teenage Girl, but so many of the other indies have not really worked. Obviously, this is the furthest thing from an indie, Wonder Woman 2, but it's hard. Anytime that I see her in a drama, it takes me out of the movie. Like, you know, she shows up in The Martian, it's like, wait, what? She shows up in Mother, it's like, wait, what? Like, it's just distracting. I don't know that I can see her really playing a villain without veering into, like, SNL-style camp. It's a head-scratcher for sure. Patty Jenkins is earning the benefit of the doubt. I mean, she cast Charlize as Eileen Wuornos. Everybody was like, "What do you? You know, this is a beautiful woman. You're gonna ugly her up." What do you? And then she won the Oscar. And plus, you know, she got a great performance out of Gal Gadot, who is not fucking Meryl Streep.
Mm.
You know, also
Chris Pine. I mean, Chris Pine was great in Wonder Woman.
Chris Pine did do very good work in that. You're right.
Hit and miss.
So Patty Jenkins, you know, has a good track record in my book as far as getting performances out of actors who maybe haven't had their a chance to prove their stuff. So I will give her the benefit of the doubt there. But on the surface, Wig's a head scratcher.
Yeah, I was certainly surprised. It was not a name, like I say, that I would have had on a short list. But you know, I trust Patty Jenkins. From her previous track record with Wonder Woman, I assume that she knows what she's doing, and Kristen has something that she wants to do with the character. But you know, I agree with you on the I don't really buy her in things that aren't funny. I mean, movies like Downsizing, which was meant to be part comedy and part drama, and it was all rubbish.
Are you surprised that Emma Stone passed?
No. For the same reasons that you've said. Yeah. I mean, I think she got burnt with Spider-Man. I don't know how much she enjoyed that experience as well. And I think she just wants to concentrate on doing some more serious actor stuff.
She's just deserving of her own movie. Yeah. She doesn't need to be play second fiddle, in somebody else's movie.
Zeno Arrow in the chat is saying, thinks that Cheetah will be the secondary villain. The primary villain could be a character called Search, C-I-R-C-E. Search? Either way,
where's that coming from?
I have no idea, but I'm just kind of like, I don't care really.
Yeah. I mean, does it really matter? It doesn't matter who Wonder Woman is going to take on.
And I hope they don't do more than one villain because I mean, that generally doesn't work.
That's what happens with these sequels is, you know, they just keep piling on villains and more characters.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would have loved to have seen another character actor along the lines of David Thewlis.
Yeah.
Not that I thought David Thewlis was anything special in Wonder Woman. But yeah, I don't know. It's just didn't excite me. I don't know why you need a big name for this either. Like, Wonder Woman did fantastic. The sequel's going to do even bigger.
And it's very rarely in these movies that it is about the villain, though. You know, it's not really the villain that people sell these movies. I mean, are there any Marvel movies that they've sold the film on the villain? I mean, I don't know.
Loki's obviously a big figure, but you're right. You know, Marvel generally is considered perceived as having a villain problem.
Yeah. I mean, it was an interesting choice.
Girls gotta work.
Girls gotta
after
work.
After that Ghostbusters reboot.
That is true.
And movies like Mother.
That is true. Yep. Hollywood is a fickle and cruel mistress. But yeah, I was quite surprised by that, and it doesn't excite me, it doesn't massively offend me, but it certainly was an interesting choice for me.
And there's no deal yet on that, obviously. It's early days, so we'll see if that closes, but I'm not sure I see anything, you know, coming along the bend for Kristen Wiig that would make her pass or turn this opportunity down, especially if Patty Jenkins is lobbying on her behalf. Mm. Shall we move on?
Yeah, let's move on. What's going to come
next? Let's talk about Kristen Wiig's Ghostbusters co-star, Christopher Hemsworth.
Hemsworth.
Who's in talks to star in the Men in Black spinoff.
Yes.
Not a reboot, not a remake.
No.
It is technically a spinoff. Yep. I don't know what that means necessarily, if they're going to be bringing back Josh Brolin or Emma Thompson or something, or if it's just, you know, it's set in that universe.
I mean, I would really like it if they went back to the Josh Brolin Men in Black 3 period, and then they kind of moved forward with him on that timeline.
I mean,
so
he's,
it's all
he's huge.
Effectively a precursor
This is the time to bet on Josh Brolin. I mean, we went to Death Wish last night, folks. Every other trailer, it either had The Rock in it or it had Josh Brolin in it. It was like Sicario, Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
Like,
Rampage,
we're leaving out Infinity War. Yes. So Josh Brolin is right up there with The Rock these days. So I think it would
Which
be
I'm
good
really
to see him back
about.
Again.
Yeah. I mean, no, absolutely. I mean, I'm really pleased that Brolin's doing, you know, is having a heyday. Yeah. I mean, I could see him coming back. I would like to see that kind of arc of the universe expanded. Yeah. I mean, I could see Hemsworth working in like maybe the 70s or 80s.
Like a period thing.
Because
that is interesting.
Well, we've had one set in the past, half set in the past. We've had one that's been set. We've had two that were set in current time. They haven't explored that Austin Powers sort of, you know, mechanic. mechanic of doing different eras. So 70s or 80s would be quite fun. Lots of cameos that you could have in that as well without it being too hammy. Lots of ideas and world events that you could influence or use to frame it. I think that would be really cool. And I think also then we discussed this previously, having a female co-star.
Well, that's what Boris Kitt's exclusive at the Hollywood Reporter indicated, and this is something that I'd heard as well, that although I actually thought it was going to be a black guy and a white girl.
Yeah.
But it's looking like white guy, black girl. Either way, you know, that there will be diversity amongst those two leads. It sounds like there's a third lead, an older male. I don't know if he'll be white or what race he'll be. I don't know if that is actually Josh Brolin. Who knows?
I would love to see Patrick Stewart in there somewhere.
Bizarre.
It's coming out of left field, but I just think that having him being some kind of boss or maybe a, you know, from the UK Men in Black or something might be quite fun.
Yeah.
I just like Patrick Stewart. I actually can see that.
Like in that Emma Thompson sort of role, yeah, running the agency. I don't know.
Could be quite good.
So, okay, let's go back to Chris Hemsworth. What do you think of this for his career, for this movie? Because it's got thumbs up for me. I think that this is the right move for him. I think that he excels at comedy.
Yep.
I think his dramatic chops are still a little shaky.
He's got the action down, though. So I think when it comes to that side of the movie,
you know, can be a big action star. But, like, you know, you see him try something like Black Hat, and it didn't work. Or In the Heart of the Sea, and it didn't work. I think that comedy is actually where I see his career going. Yep. Action comedy?
Yep.
I suppose.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, even I wasn't a massive fan of 12 Strong, but when it came to...
That's another drama.
Yeah, when it came to dramatic acting, actually his turn in that was better than he's done in some other previous movies. And, you know, previously I'd said the same thing about Chris Pine. You know, I mean, Chris Pine, I never really saw as doing anything particularly dramatic. And then he did, you know, Hell or High Water. And he absolutely knocked that out of the park. So I think if the material is right and the direction is right, it could be something that is pulled out of Hemsworth to actually deliver.
And they have F. Gary Gray. They have a good director on it.
Yeah, yeah.
On the Chris Pine front, I agree with you that, like, after, you know, his first few movies, I didn't think he was anything special. But I had seen him on stage doing Farragut North.
Yeah.
So I knew that, you know, he'd certainly had something inside of him. Hemsworth, obviously great. He was the best thing in Ghostbusters.
Yes, he was.
Total scene stealer. I thought he was really funny in Vacation. He was even good in those Dundee, you know. So I think this is smart for him, and it's a big star for Sony to pull into this franchise. Yeah. I think he's the right guy to lead this franchise
forward. You can see the ad campaign. You can see the posters. You can see all the advertorial and editorial that comes with it. You can see them really having fun with this. This could be their equivalent of something like a Deadpool when it comes to a Thor when it comes to a really successful marketing sort of approach and stand, creative editorial and stuff like that.
Is there anybody who you would like to see playing that black female lead?
Well, this is a name that I had thought of, and actually it's Animation Dude A113, snappy name. I'm assuming that the other 112 animation
Do you not get that joke? A113?
No.
Oh, man.
I missed it. Okay.
A113, I know what you're going for with that joke. I get it.
I totally missed it. So it's a reference.
It's in every Pixar movie.
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. Janelle Monáe for the female partner. Yeah, I could see that. I think that's a great call. Janelle Monáe. Haddish might be getting a bit lazy when it comes to casting black women because she has a lot on, and she's kind of gone into that pole position of, we need a black woman, let's get Tiffany Haddish.
So she is the clear fan favorite. I mean, you know, just looking at my Twitter mentions, that was sort of the first name that leapt to most people's minds. I think she's a little too old.
Okay.
I think, you know, by the time this came out, she'd be like around 40, which is not really where you want to reboot a franchise. And also, I think that there may be some romance between these two characters, or at least there needs to be that romantic tension, like that Mulder and Scully, will they or won't they?
Yep.
And I don't know that Tiffany Haddish can do that. True. I don't know that I see her as a romantic foil, particularly for somebody like Chris Hemsworth.
Unless they use that actually as a MacGuffin by the fact that she's not only a, let's say they're setting it in like in the 70s, whatever. She is a older black woman. She'll have a previous life who becomes
and
a woman in black.
She's constantly hitting on Chris Hemsworth. Like, you know, hitting, you want this.
Yeah, but also then there's a thing of like, you're a woman, what are you doing in a man's world? And you're older, what are you doing in a man's world? That kind of playing on the misogyny thing.
Tiffany would
be
very
quite
funny.
Yeah, she'd be very funny.
I don't
Janelle
know
Monáe,
if,
I can very much see.
If her and Hemsworth is the right pairing, Janelle Monáe, I think, is a great call.
Great call.
I don't know how funny she is necessarily.
Mm.
And you would think that if
she's the straight
if
one,
if Sony was going to cast her in a big IP that they have over there, you would think that it would be Charlie's Angels.
But how funny was Tommy Lee? Yeah. Yes, I agree. You know, but what about Tommy Lee Jones? I mean, Tommy Lee Jones...
You're right. He wasn't exactly known for comedy,
you know,
but
Will
that,
Smith was the funny guy.
You're 100% correct.
Tommy Lee Jones was the straight contrast. Guy. And that would be quite interesting, because also then, if they do this time hop thing, or they set it in a different era, having the fact that it's not only a woman, but she's the responsible one, and he's kind of the loose cannon, the jokey one, that would actually work really, really well.
Okay.
Good call. Really, really interesting.
I think my favorite would be Issa Rae. I just think Issa Rae is very, very funny. I think she's going to blow up in features real soon.
Yeah.
She was actually somebody who I was thinking of for that 9 to 5 remake that we're going to talk about shortly.
Yeah.
So
I have another name. I just want to make sure I get her name right that I think actually might be quite good. She hasn't done a lot of films. She's in a very successful TV show and already has her own spin-off. Yara Shahidi from Blackish.
Too young.
Do you think she's too young? Yeah. And she's like early 20s.
Yeah, too young.
Too young?
I think so.
Okay.
Not a bad suggestion, though.
Yeah.
Like
she's
most,
got a good
like
following.
Most of
she
your
looks
insane
amazing.
Creative suggestions. But
what about Martin Lawrence in a fat suit?
Yes.
Big Mama's Kroll, Men in Black.
I mean, a week or two ago, Kroll had tweeted that he'd like to see Letitia Wright do something like this. I think she
Well, I said that a couple of weeks ago, but you kind of didn't think that she was quite there yet.
For the middle, for the lead in Men in Black?
Yeah. I think she, you see, I think she's...
You know what? I don't remember saying that, but it sounds like something I would say.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to reverse course and say, yeah. I think that she may be, just given all the cultural currency that movie has right now.
Yeah. And if she was the female boffin kind of to the Chris Hemsworth character, I think it'd be quite fun. Do you know what? What is really nice is the fact that we have a lot of options for casting that kind of thing.
Because exactly.
That is really nice.
A couple years ago, you'd have like one or two names. You're like,
there's one black lady. What do we do?
Yeah. You're right.
It's good.
The times are changing.
Yep.
All right. Let's transition
to
the big dog, Mr. Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Who has emerged from his hiatus holding a new script.
Yes.
It is called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It is a perfect title. What do you think of the title?
I really like it.
I mean, it is genuinely like knowing what...
How has no one found that title?
Yeah,
for
knowing
story
what
before?
Quentin's influences are and, you know, the whole Once Upon a Time in the West, Once Upon a Time in America, etc. It's kind of perfect. And he also is bringing back two of his biggest stars, Brad Pitt from Inglourious Basterds and Leonardo DiCaprio from Django Unchained. Do you know they have never worked together before, I don't think, in front of the cameras?
You're right. They haven't.
Although they were both on Growing Pains. They just weren't on at the same time. Brad Pitt showed up in a season 3 episode of Growing Pains, but I don't think Leo came into that show until like the 7th season. Anyways, the idea of these two guys working together is super fucking exciting. The idea that Brad Pitt would play Leo's stunt double is also pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like the synopsis that Quentin provided in the release. You know, it wasn't just like a studio sanctioned logline. It had a little personality to it. It was like Quentin reading it to you. I mean, that is what you love about, you know, that's when you read one of his scripts. It's like it's own thing from the movie. I don't know. This movie sounds super exciting. I imagine Quentin will round up some of the usual suspects, guys like Sam Jackson, Tim Roth. Who knows who else? He's obviously trying to get Margot Robbie to play Sharon Tate.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the right move for her at this point in her career. I don't know if she needs to be the blonde who's being chased by Charles Manson. I don't know how big a role that is in the script or whatever.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm actually really torn over that because we've heard that this is going to be Tarantino's swan song. This is going to be
right.
His
like, are all
movie.
The actors going to try to work with him?
So, if you want to get on
only
the Tarantino
got one more
bus,
after this.
Yeah. If you want to work with Tarantino, then this is the only one. I mean, I don't think he'll stop making movies. I think he'll come back at some point. You know, I think it's bullshit. But if you think that this might be the last time to get on the Tarantino bus, you want to get on that bus. So you'll take the role, whatever role you can get, whatever your role you want to take, whatever opportunity comes your way. So I agree with you in that point, but I think if she does want to work with Tarantino and have that on her resume, She'll do it.
I think it helps that, you know, she'd be working with Pitt and Leo again.
Yeah.
Since she broke out in The Wolf of Wall Street with DiCaprio and also appeared in The Big Short, co-starring Brad Pitt and produced by Brad Pitt, I believe. So, fingers crossed that Quentin gets everybody on his wish list.
It's coming together really nicely.
And, just a couple weeks ago, there were, I think it was like IndieWire running stories like this movie is still happening, as if it was not going to happen because of the allegations, you know, with the Uma Thurman stuff. Obviously, it hasn't been a great month or so for Quentin, but the idea that this was not going to happen, like, this is a new Quentin Tarantino movie. Sony beat out a ton of studios for the bidding. There's no way they were going to walk away from this or pull the plug on it.
Well,
no way.
I mean, a couple of weeks ago on the show when you weren't here, you were, I think it was your... I can't remember why you were away, but you, I was talking about other people who had read for roles in the movie, and Jude Law was someone else.
For the Tarantino movie?
Has read for the movie.
Interesting.
So I would think that we'll see a couple of people like that potentially coming through. Now, I don't know what roles they read for, but that's what I've been told.
I'm surprised Jude Law is reading at all.
He is one of those on the list.
Okay. So. What's next on your list? You pick.
Okay, let's talk about. We'll just finish off with some superhero stuff. Captain Marvel. Just a quick thing on this. The screenwriter was saying that is going to be more of an action comedy than a straight out action Marvel movie. I think we're very close to the point where we're getting a 50-50 split between pure action and comedy with Marvel, which I do enjoy the comedy events in the Marvel movies and the way that those are carried out and the way they're scripted and factored in. What I don't want to happen is, basically they don't care what I say, but in my own opinion, is I don't want it to become almost like a schizophrenic universe where you have a 50-50 split between serious movies and funny movies, because I think if you start to do that, it just then starts to divides the franchise too much, and then when you try to sew those together, it makes it a lot more difficult to do that without too much of a tonal shift. You find it difficult to sew together. I mean, I'm up for it being having comedic elements and lighter stuff. But as far as a going more comedic, more Guardians of the Galaxy, Ant-Man, too far that way, I'd be very careful with that if I was them. But I do want to have some levity in there, absolutely.
Yeah, I think...
What do you think?
You know, that levity is important to these movies. I think Marvel has focused a little too much on the comedy at times. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't... When I hear people coming out of Thor Ragnarok... The first thing I hear out of their mouths, I don't want it to be, well, that was hilarious.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for hilarious from a Marvel movie, let alone Thor Ragnarok. I don't know. Fleck and Bowden don't strike me as the best comedy directors. I think the only thing that they did before was It's Kind of a Funny Story, right?
Yeah.
It has funny in the title. It's kind of not a very funny story. It's not funny at all.
Yeah.
It's definitely their worst movie. Brie Larson, again, I don't know how hilarious she is. You know, it's not like she's Paul Rudd and Ant-Man. So, again, I would just tread carefully.
Yeah.
Just the whole cast. It's like, that's not a real Ben Mendelsohn, hilarious. Jude Law, a laugh riot.
And you don't really want a repeat of, like, say, what has just happened with Solo, where it was like... okay, that's too much like a comedy and not a sci-fi movie. You know, I'm like,
I just think, I don't know.
I enjoy the comedy. I don't want action comedies. That's action movies with some comedy is great.
Yeah, I
just
mean,
see
it's impossible
it
to creating talk about this stuff without seeing the movie or reading the script.
Yeah.
They did add Gemma Chan.
They did, who I really like, really like.
I'm not that familiar with her work, but she seems like a lovely lady.
Yeah.
Anything else on the Captain Marvel front?
I think that's it.
Okay.
Cool.
Let's talk about fucking Scarface, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Fuqua.
This keeps coming around
back
and around.
It's a movie that will not die.
Yeah.
Antoine Fuqua back in talks, which I think is a good call. I thought he was a good call the first time. And I did get my wish, though. It sounds like Diego Luna is out.
Mm.
Sounds like if Antoine was coming back, he would have to be able to start from scratch in the casting. And again, this is very early still. But yeah, Diego Luna was never right for Scarface. He was, in fact, all wrong. I can't believe he ever got attached in the first place.
Yep.
They need to cast a fucking unknown. We've said this before. I don't get it. Scarface is the brand. You don't need a big movie star or Diego Luna coming off Rogue One when he had a bunch of heat. You don't need that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuqua should be able to find somebody. I always thought that the guy from American Crime, I'm blanking on his name, Richie Cabral.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he would be really good. I don't know. There's others out there. You definitely don't need Diego Luna, who's just so diminutive. I don't know. I mean, not that Al Pacino was like some like big dude. He was like a little.
Yeah.
You know,
he's not a tall man, Pacino.
No, he's a little. He's a little guy too. But like, he's larger than life. He has that presence, and I just don't think Diego Luna has that presence at all. So Fuqua.
Yes.
Luna out, and the release date has also been moved. It's been taken off the calendar because it was scheduled to come out in August, even though it hasn't shot a frame of footage.
So that's not going to happen. No. So where's it moved to now? 19 or 20?
It doesn't have a date. Yeah, nor should they rush this thing.
I would be surprised if it comes out next year. I could see early 2020.
I could see him getting started this summer or this fall. I don't know when Equalizer 2 comes out. But that is Denzel's first sequel. I imagine it will do well. And that's Fuqua as well. So he's going to be coming off a hit, I think.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, so talking of movies that are being remade, revived, rebooted. Great news this week about Rashida Jones. Going to be co-penning 9 to 5.
Was that actual news about... it says that there's a 9 to 5 remake and that they want Rashida Jones to write it. But is that like a deal? It was just like an interest story.
Looks like it. I think she would be really. I really like her work. I do really like her work. And there was also talk this week of potentially Dolly Parton, Lily Tomlin, and Jane Fonda coming back in roles. Now, I don't see those potentially as being the lead roles. I see those as being handoff roles or B-level casting positions. I think I want them to return. I don't know.
I don't care either way.
You don't care. Did you not like 9 to 5?
I don't care. No.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Whatever.
It's a comedy movie.
I think they should just remake this thing. I don't think they should bring back the original cast. I think someone like Issa Rae would be great. I think Gina Rodriguez would be great. I've seen a few of these projects that are sort of in development around town. Fox had one that was called Women in Business, I think, that they were looking at Emma Stone for.
But there are quite a few of these that aren't actually coming to fruition. I think it's Murphy Brown is coming back to TV. You know, there are quite a few of these sort of 80s, 90s era.
And then the time is right for a 9 to 5 remake.
Whatever happened to the Working Girl reversioning? There was a talk of that like a year, 18 months ago. And that never really came to anything.
I don't know. Rashida Jones, what are her credentials?
She was Brooklyn 999. She's done a few movies.
For writing?
Oh, no, not for writing.
Yeah.
No.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like. Yeah, I don't know.
What has she written, actually? Let me see. I don't know if she wrote
she wrote Celeste and Jesse with Will McCormick?
I don't know. Everybody Rashida Will? Jones. Let me just check what she's actually written previously, and we'll run through that.
Because just like she got hired on Toy Story, and then everyone thought she was like this power writer, and then they threw her script in the garbage.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
She still wrote it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's have a look. So
I'm not as excited about this as anybody else.
Is very long. Let me see. It's going to be shorter than her list. Writer. She has 4 credits as a writer to date. Celeste and Jesse Forever.
Yeah.
She wrote an episode of A to Z. I'm not familiar with that. She wrote Nosedive, Black Mirror, and Hot Girls Wanted turned on a documentary that she was involved in. So her writing credits are not there quite yet. She's done some... direction and obviously her acting resume, her comedy acting resume is really strong.
Yeah, listen, I like Rashida Jones in front of the camera. I don't know if she's like some like power comedy scribe. Like, I don't know, go get fucking, I mean, if then, listen, yeah. If the team from 9 to 5 really wants to do this right, you go get Karen McCullough and you get Kiwi Smith.
Yep, no, I agree with that, but also,
like, it's as simple as that.
Everybody has a first job, though. You know, our first major job.
Yeah, yeah, no, you know? I get it. I'm not here to, like, points. I'm not trying to knock Rashida. I'm just saying, I think there's better options out there. If I was the executive on 9 to 5, I'd be looking elsewhere.
Okay. Just backtracking, Zeno is asking in the chat, going back to Scarface, do you think that Scarface should be directed by someone of Mexican or Latin descent?
No.
No, I don't think it matters.
What is this where white people have to direct white people movies and black people have to... It's fucking ridiculous.
There was a quote from...
Antoine Fuqua was great.
From Ava at the Wrinkle in Time press conference the other day. And she was saying that she doesn't have kids. She doesn't plan to have kids. But she wanted to make this kids movie. The movies are her kids. And there is this thing that goes around. It's like, if you aren't X, then you can't direct movies about X. No, you absolutely can. You will have a different viewpoint. But there's nothing to say that... Like you say, movies for an African American audience have to be written by and directed by an African American or white
recently.
For white,
I don't know who said it, but it was like, we need black artists telling stories that aren't just about black people.
Yeah, because
we need them telling all kinds of stories to get their perspective on all kinds of people and matters.
Because also then you get the criticism, it's like, oh, it's a black movie by black people for black people. Oh, it's their agenda.
It's so
you literally
lazy.
Can't please everybody.
It's just
but
so
no,
fucking
lazy. In short, no, I don't think you have to have someone from that. Group to play,
yeah,
or direct or write it at all.
Maybe maybe they hired Rick Famuyiwa on Black Hole because he's black. Jesus Christ,
is he also a hole?
Black Hole. Let's talk about Black Hole.
Let's talk about that.
Have you read it?
I haven't. I'm aware of it. I haven't read it,
dude. It's fucking great.
Yeah. Well,
you guys know I'm not a comic book movie. I'm not a graphic novel guy. This is one of the first graphic novels that I ever read. It blew me away.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to get into graphic novels at the moment, and I've got a long fight coming up at the end of next week. I have Alistair Arcane to read that I got given at Christmas. That's the movie that Eli Roth, we can get to Eli Roth later, is working on, and John Croker has written it, and Jim Carrey's starring in it. So I've got that to read.
What is this?
Yeah, it's a movie. It's like 18 months ago.
Alistair what?
Alistair Arcane. It's based on a graphic
with
novel.
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey in the lead, Eli directing.
That'll happen.
But yeah, so Black Hole is also one that I was like, I've constantly seen this recommended, and I haven't read it. So I am actually going to get these two, and I'm going to read them on
Rick Famuyiwa is the kind of filmmaker where it's like you hear about him getting attached to some big project every 3 to 6 months, and then he... You know, inevitably turns into draft and they go in another direction or something. Like, this guy just can't get it to stick, it seems like, because he had a very promising... I guess it wasn't his debut. People think of Dope as his debut. He'd actually directed a few studio movies before that.
Dope's a great movie.
Dope is very good. I really like Dope. I did not like Confirmation, his HBO movie with Kerry Washington. And then he's done The Shy. And I like the pilot for that. But... I think he's a cool hire for this. He's an outside the box hire. He has proven he can work with a young ensemble. Hey, look, right now, breaking news on Rick Famuyiwa. Netflix scores vigilante superhero feature from Rick Famuyiwa with Keanu Reeves in talks to star.
Hmm.
Well then.
There you go. How'd you like them?
But he has worked with a young ensemble before.
Yep.
Black Hole is about. It's set in the Pacific Northwest, and it's about a bunch of high school kids and this sexually transmitted disease of sorts called the bug that prompts some genetic mutations.
Oh.
You know, as people grow wings or a tail or something. I don't know. It's interesting.
That does sound pretty cool.
This new project is called Past Midnight, a new kind of vigilante superhero. Hopefully Reeves comes on to star, blah, 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 blah.
Dope. Here's a fun fact about Dope. When I arrived in the US, that was the movie that I watched on the plane when I relocated in 2015. And obviously a great movie set in LA. And that was the movie that I watched as I was about to start my new life in the City of Angels.
Aww, that is cute.
So, one day I'll meet him and I'll tell him that story.
I really hope that Black Hole... I really hope that Black Hole comes together.
Cool.
I would like to see this be Rick's next movie.
Cool.
Yeah, it sounds better than Vigilante Superhero movie, which is kind of what we watched last night.
Yes.
Death Wish.
Yes.
Let's just get into it.
Should we talk about that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, do you want to do box office now as well? Take a break and do that? Okay, cool. We were texting, because we're bros, going, hey, man, I'm going to go and see Death... Actually, I saw your tweet that you were going to go and see it. And I was like, well, I'm going to get on my own otherwise, because nobody else wants to see it. So I was like, hey, bro!
By the way, we tried to sit next to you last night, but when you're picking the seats, you don't know what the numbers are.
I text you. I was in J16.
Well, I know, but when I got to the theater and then I'm looking at the seats,
you didn't like them.
No, I was like, well, which side is J16? Because I couldn't sit next to you. So you
totally
we had to guess. Anyways,
Death Wish. Yeah.
Did you didn't really like it?
I didn't really like it. I didn't think it was terrible. I didn't really like it. And it's not because I know there's a lot of stuff going around this movie going like, oh my God, it's a white guy with guns fantasy. It's very politicized. And yeah, I think it's not the right time for this movie to come out. I think it's unfortunate timing. You just don't know when these things are going to happen. And this gun debate constantly rages, here in the States. So there's never going to be any time you'd release this movie where this would not be aligned with the gun control arguments and the gun lobbies and anti-gun people, et cetera, et cetera. So you're never going to avoid that. That's always going to be on the table. Right. It's just unfortunate timing for this. As a movie, I didn't really love it. I mean, it wasn't terrible. There was nothing really fundamentally wrong with it. There were some little bits of sort of preachy from both sides, and I was like, eh, okay. I don't know whether this is pro-gun or anti-gun. It just didn't... Nothing... It just felt like a bit of a missed opportunity. I mean, I didn't particularly like the villains. Mm-hmm. I thought they were really weak. It kind of just ended without really that much of a build-up, and I was like, it didn't really leave me thinking, oh, great, well, this is a great kickoff point for a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Willis kind of looked like he was taking the piss out of himself most of the movie.
Is on Thorazine in this movie.
He's just
sleepwalking through it. He was bad.
Yeah. He's done some shit.
And I almost interjected earlier in the show, but, you know, we were talking about Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
Josh Brolin would have been perfect for a Death Wish.
This was, I mean, I love Bruce Willis. He's done some crap straight to VOD stuff.
Yeah, and this is better than that,
yeah,
I think.
It is, but it's still not great.
He is not good. And Drew, you know, reviewed it for the Tracking Board. You guys should check out his review if you're thinking of seeing this movie. He was just like, it's not a good performance. It's not a bad performance.
It just hangs there.
It's a weird performance. It is a weird one.
The whole film just kind of hangs there, and it doesn't really... I didn't feel any attachment to it. I didn't feel any, and whether that's in a positive or a negative way, it was really completely, I just felt completely neutral towards it.
So you didn't really have any strong feelings, but you didn't like it.
No.
My friend Matt Silverman thought it was a bore.
Right. Yeah, it was not exciting.
I disagreed.
Interesting.
That's right. Let me just read you a tweet, or this is on Facebook, from James Oster.
Okay.
Who is better known to the community as Jimmy O from Joe Blow.
Okay.
Jimmy O says, as a huge fan of revenge-driven flicks, I enjoyed what Eli Roth brought to Death Wish, yet I fully understand the issues others have with it, especially the timing. However, I tend not to consider crappy timing in movies release as part of a review.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with Jimmy O on this. I don't care about the timing. Like, there is... First of all, you're right. There's never the right time. But I don't care how bad this looks, like, you know, coming on the heels of Parkland. A movie can't help that. A movie is made in a vacuum of sorts. I don't blame this movie for the timing at all.
And
even though, you know, Drew sort of argued, like, it doesn't bring much to the conversation about guns, which the first one sort of did, you know, it was more of like a vigilante movie than a revenge movie. This is definitely more a revenge movie than vigilante. But... I thought it worked for, you know, for what Eli Roth brought to it and what this movie was in his mind. I thought it worked. Bruce is not good, and with another actor, this movie probably would have been 30% better.
Yep.
But I enjoyed some of the gore gags and
No, I agree with you on that.
D'Onofrio, you're right. The villains are weak, and I would have liked to have seen Bo Knapp, an actor I really like, who now stars on 7 Seconds on Netflix. I would have liked to seen him introduced a lot earlier, because that whole thing where it's like you don't even get a good look at the guy until like the last scene.
Yeah, and I just felt, I mean, considering how visceral some of the, and there's some visceral imagery in this, but how visceral the tension and the atmosphere can be can really put you on edge in some of Eli's work, and even stuff that he's produced that he hasn't directed. There's really an atmosphere, a tenseness, and whether that's
exactly that home invasion is, I thought, was very well staged.
Yeah, but it just, for me, didn't have the menace. It didn't have the awkward intensity of, mm-hmm. of some of the other stuff that, even where I think Eli hasn't made a particularly good movie, there's always been that element of, you know, oh, this is making me, you know, feel something. I just felt it lacked that atmosphere, that tension. Now, it's an R-rated movie. I'm wondering whether or not that had to be toned down. I think the soundtrack for this was very weak. That, you know, that could have really added that extra level to this, which I think was kind of a letdown. And too many cutaways to radio stations and people talking. I didn't like that. There could have been a different narrative for that. I'm always sad to see Elizabeth Shue not in an entire movie. I still have the biggest crush on Elizabeth Shue. Mm-hmm. She will never not be hot. So any movie that she's in, I will watch anyway. I thought The Daughter was pretty good, but kind of wasted.
I agree with that. I almost would have liked to have seen her and Shue switch, like, the fates.
Vincent
there.
D'Onofrio's character, I was really looking forward to seeing something from him. Again, that didn't kind of really go anywhere.
You're kind of anticipating a twist, because there's, like, a money situation with him, and so you're wondering, well, maybe was he behind...
Yeah, and it just didn't...
Veering into spoiler territory, but yeah, you're right. There's no twist coming there. It's very straightforward.
And considering it's Eli at the helm... And it was written by Joe Carnahan. They're both guys who can deliver a sting in the tail, and at that, for me, it wasn't there. It didn't build. It was fine.
I think the movie's going to do okay this weekend. Yeah. Like, I went to, after our interview on Hollywood Boulevard, I went to Chick-fil-A.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I had chicken nuggets at 10 in the morning.
Lovely.
And there was a table of, like, blue-collar guys, and they were talking about how good Death Wish, you know, looked.
Yep.
So I think that there is an audience for this. It may be not be the audience that listens to the show or the audience that the people who listen to the show would associate with.
Yeah.
You know, but...
But also, I mean,
there are people will see this,
and there is this commentary, you know, around the political commentary around it. I mean, I didn't think it was a bad film at all. I wasn't particularly enamored by it. But I mean, everybody knows that I'm a liberal. This film did not offend me.
Scum.
This did not. I didn't think, oh, this is like pro NRA. This is pro guns. It didn't really stick me as that kind of movie. If anything, it puts two sides of an argument. I just didn't think it was as good as it could have been.
So I guess before the press screenings on Wednesday night, Eli Roth had a video, like a short video introduction, and he was saying, you know, listen, if you guys don't like the movie, review it on Saturday. Just give me Friday.
Yeah.
And if you do post negative reviews, I'm going to come hunt you down. Like the bear Jew. What do you think of that, like, strategy? Like, do you think, like, that I get Eli Roth, like, doing it because that's his brand, and, you know, it's, like, kind of tongue-in-cheek, but, like, as far as Annapurna, you think Annapurna should have included that short introduction before press screenings, or do you think Annapurna should have been like, Eli, we're not doing this?
I mean,
it's sort of like begging for, like, bad reviews, and...
It does set them up. But I think this movie was going to... I mean, I know IGN, William at IGN gave it like a 3. A lot of other people have not given
it a strong
review.
Joe Blow gave it a 7 out of 10.
Who did?
Joe Blow.
Oh, interesting. I mean, I think it is going to be one of these ones where you're going to have the either low or the quite high. You know, the higher end, but not like 10 out of 10. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it did any harm.
It's possible
I think
it's to be 10 out of 10 with this Bruce Willis performance.
It's classic Eli Roth kind of... You know, he likes to fuck about with the system, and I think that's fine. I mean... Ultimately, this is a movie that is really going to last in the theaters for a couple of weeks. It's going to have its nice opening weekend. It's going to drop out of the top 10. So do you know what?
It's going to do
Eli Roth's work. I mean, I think some of his work is not as good as some of his other stuff. But, you know, I'm like, do you know what? If it means that Eli Roth continues to be able to make movies, and Alistair Kane is one of them.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I'm like, give him a good opening weekend. There'll be probably like a 50-60% drop-off week two, week three. It'll be out of multiplexes within the month. Just... Throw Eli a fucking cookie.
I think Hollywood is better with Eli Roth working in it. I will give you that.
So I'm like,
So tell me box office wise, how's it looking?
Okay, so it's looking at 14 to 16 this weekend, which is not too bad. It's a $30 million budget. So that if that's an opening weekend, I think this can wipe its face. It can do quite well, possibly make a profit. I don't think we're going to look like, say, Hitman's Bodyguard overexceeded what people thought last year. I don't think it's going to reach that kind of level of stuff, but I do think it's going to do. It's going to make a profit, and it's going to be absolutely fun. And everyone's going to be, you know, moderately happy with that, especially considering the current climate. I think that's very good. Red Sparrow is the other major release that took 1.2 million in previews last night. That's looking at about 15 to 19 million for the weekend. This is going by Variety's predictions.
Jeff Snyder at the Tracking Board calls it absolutely gripping in the ad campaign.
I saw it this week.
Did you like it?
No, I didn't.
Oh, man.
I didn't dislike it. I thought it was over long. I didn't like the pacing.
It is long.
There's a lot of Jennifer Lawrence's tits in it.
It is long, and there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
But I felt like it was a real movie. It was a real... This is not a gimmick. Like, we have a real script. This is an adult film.
Yeah.
I thought it was terrific.
You see, I didn't dislike it. For me, I thought it was over long. I would have cut, like, 30 minutes out of it. I thought there was some really nice element to it. So I thought Jennifer Lawrence was great. Didn't buy the chemistry between her and Joel at all. Mm. And that's not a spoiler because that stuff's in the trailer. The violence, I thought, was too extreme and out of place. I mean, I do not mind violence in movies. Personally, I've never had a problem with it. It was too much of a juxta to the rest of the stuff. It came out of nowhere and it didn't really go anywhere. I thought that the torture sequences were far better handled than some of the other ones, where she's experiencing
torture.
It almost
felt like an Eli Roth movie.
Eli Roth, Red Sparrow.
Like, yeah.
But it's, it just wasn't a film that really blew me away. I thought there were a lot of good elements. You know, I really enjoyed Jeremy Irons. I like Jeremy Irons in pretty much anything anyway. I think he's the Don. He's like, you know, British Christopher Walken. You put him in and he's amazing. Mm. But yeah, I mean, I didn't dislike it. I didn't really love it as much as some other people.
Did you have a problem with Jen's accent? I didn't. It didn't bother me. People are really getting hung up on it. Like,
no, to me, that was the least of the film's problems. You know, I thought it was interesting. It did remind me how much I do enjoy, like, a Cold War kind of thriller. You know, a lot of the stuff that we had in the 80s and 90s. It had that 80s, 90s
I think
Cold
I liked
War
this more than Tinker Tailor, to be honest. Tinker Tailor was a movie that was a little long and slow for me.
Tinker Tailor I wasn't a massive fan of either. I mean, that had some big problems for me. Right, but so, it wasn't terrible. I mean, I would give it a... If it was a 10, I'd give it a, you know, a 5, maybe a 6.
Okay. Well, Death Wish 14 to 16, Red Sparrow 15 to 19, yeah. But they're both coming in way behind.
Black Panther.
What's it looking like in weekend 3, Simon?
That's going to be by quite some margin. You know, we're not going to see much of a drop off. I mean, last weekend I thought we said it was going to be 120. It was like 110, something like that. I think this weekend we're still looking at, you know, high, you know, really under 100. But still, you know, still not far off that. I mean, the word of mouth and the people who are repeat viewing that is incredible. It's got a massive, massive return factor on that.
We've got about 10 to 15 minutes left in this show, so let's try to hum it along because we do want to get the Oscar predictions.
Yes.
The Weinstein Company, they accepted a bid. That doesn't mean that there's a deal.
No.
It means that there's an agreement in principle. You know who else had an agreement? Josh McDaniels had an agreement to coach the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah,
and then the next day. Yeah, exactly. If there's no signed deal. It's not a fucking deal yet. I don't know what the assets thing means. Like, you know, they're talking about 51% of the company. Like, what? I don't know what is going on, and I don't know when we will know, honestly.
And yeah, I mean, probably the key part of this deal is a predominantly female investor group that's going to come and take this over. If they still haven't
addressed David Glasser's fate.
That
wasn't in any of the interviews last night. You know, like Fleming at Deadline staying up late to interview Tarek Ben and Mari. It just felt... I'm telling you, there's something shady about this whole fucking endeavor. Schneiderman's like reversal, like it's just weird. Every statement has been so politicized. There's something up. Something up.
So we'll see what happens with that. But obviously
Do you think that they can turn it around?
I wouldn't buy it.
I don't even know. It's like if you're going to launch a new company, why do you need the Weinstein Company's infrastructure to do it? I understand not wanting to lay off 150 people. What are these 150 people been doing the last year too? Like, they just sitting there with their thumbs
up. You know
the
Hollywood system like I do. The place is bloated with people who either do nothing or do a shit job.
Yeah, they just collect paychecks. What are these people doing?
Yeah.
We have no movies.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
Danny Boyle and Richard Curtis are teaming up. Now, this is noteworthy because everybody had linked Boyle to Bond. Now we have trades insisting that Boyle will do this movie first. That if Bond really wants Boyle, they will wait for him.
Yeah. Although production on this is due to start in the summer. So yeah, we'll see what happens with that.
So, you know, but it was Bond obviously was not going to be ready. And they don't have to be tied into that date. They can always move things.
Yeah.
I think Danny Boyle would be worth waiting for, but I also understand why they may just say, all right, well, you know, if you want to go do your musical, go ahead. We're going to move on with somebody else. Maybe we can come back to you down the line.
And I do like the work of Richard Curtis. I mean, obviously, I'm assuming Danny's going to direct and Richard's going to write and produce.
And musicals are red hot right now, obviously. Yeah,
absolutely. So that's good news. I'm pleased with that one. A load of stuff that came out of Disney and Marvel this week. Mulan has set the live actions now moved to 2020. Someone is asking as well, what do I feel about the Infinity War moving forward a week? It makes no difference. I mean, people get to see it earlier,
War,
but I don't think
that's just a brilliant move on Disney's part. That weekend before it was wide open, the Amy Schumer movie, I feel pretty, is the biggest movie on that date.
Yeah.
I don't know why you wouldn't do it, and just to get a third weekend cushion, but before Deadpool 2 hits, of course, something could move up into that Avengers old date or the 11th, which with the only big release there is the Melissa McCarthy movie, Life of the Party. Honestly, so I think obviously this provides Avengers with a little bit more cushion between Deadpool 2 and Solo.
Yeah.
And it also cuts back on the spoilers because the international opening was going to be before. But really, I'll tell you who this hurts.
Okay.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Because around then he's got
Rampage. Rampage will now have, I believe, 1 week, maybe two. I think it's just 1 week in theaters before Avengers hits. Mm. So he can't be happy with that.
No.
But I mean, he's got Jungle Cruise with the studio. I think he talked to somebody over there. He's stepping on my toes.
But I like the Avengers movies, and I'm also a big fan of Day and Date because it stops spoilers, it stops all this stuff going.
I don't know why they don't do Day and Date for this stuff.
With these big movies, you should just do Day and Date internationally.
Mulan, super long delay. It's like 15-month delay. You know, we haven't really heard any casting outside of the star.
Yeah,
that's going to be a tricky movie, I think.
And Marvel have scheduled 7 movies up to 2022, and live action Disney. They're now scheduled up to 2023 with an animated title coming in 2022.
Yeah, they dropped a whole bunch of Pixar and Marvel dates. We don't know when anything is.
No,
the other notable thing is that they took that Anna Kendrick movie, Noelle, which was called Nicole, took it off the release calendar, and that's what's going to happen to it. Yeah. It's going to streaming. They haven't confirmed any streaming
titles. I think we're
going
to see more of that, to be honest with you, but there we go.
Like Magic Camp.
Okay, let's talk about Oscars weekend.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, we're not going to get into the John Campion, the rap Batman thing.
No, I mean,
which
a lot of people have been asking about
that. That's a non-story, folks.
Yeah, sorry,
nothing to see here. Matt Reeves, though, he's producing that Life Sentence movie for Netflix. They won that big option. And then the big thing, honestly, the biggest thing on my Twitter all week, Viola Davis and Lupita Nyong'o teaming up for The Woman King. Holy shit.
Really good.
When you get Black Twitter excited about something, you know you have a hit. And judging by the numbers on my Twitter feed, that movie's going to be the biggest movie of all time.
Yeah.
All right, Oscar prediction, Simon.
Okay, let's start. We're going to go through a couple of the categories. Let's go animated feature director, supporting actress, supporting actor, blah, blah, blah.
Whoa. Wait a second. We don't need to talk about all this stuff. Coco is going to win animated,
Coco's
right?
Coco's going to win animated.
Do you think all the acting categories are predetermined?
I think there's a little bit of room for maneuver.
Where?
Okay. Well, let's talk about director, first of all. And then we'll go to acting.
Okay.
Director, Chris Nolan, Dunkirk, Jordan Peele,
Get
Out.
Who the nominees are.
Okay. Who do you think is going to win?
Come on. Del Toro.
Yeah. Del Toro, definitely.
Let me guide this conversation, my friend. Guillermo del Toro, yes, he's going to win. Who do you think, if there's going to be an upset in the acting races, who do you think it will be?
Acting races, I mean, supporting. I think the upset, I think it's going to be Annis and Jenny. I think the upset would be Laurie Metcalf for Lady Bird.
Yes, but do you think that she's going to do it?
No, I think it's going to be Allison
Janney. So you're thinking Chuck?
Yeah.
All right, then Chuck.
Okay.
So, between acting races, Del Toro's, it's like we already kind of know this stuff. It's not that exciting a show. Let's talk about, there's like three races that interest me, honestly. Documentary, do you think Icarus is going to win?
Highly likely, yeah.
Just because it has the Netflix advertising budget behind it, and the Russia Olympics and the timing and everything.
Yep.
Do you think Roger Deakins will win in cinematography? Or do you think it'll be like go to Dunkirk or Shape of Water?
I think Shape of Water is the one that could surprise there.
Like everybody's giving it to Deakins. This movie's not good. It looked great.
Yeah.
But man, is that all cinematography is now? It doesn't have to do with, like, storytelling. It's just...
Dunkirk is in many ways, you know, a great achievement. But for me, Shape of Water is the movie that...
That's interesting that you would go with Dan Lost in there. I thought, you know, I didn't love Dunkirk. It put me right fucking there. I thought the cinematography was great by Hoyt Van Hoytma. Original screenplay.
Yeah.
So this is the big. This is kind of the big one. Before we get to picture, which is we're gonna end the show on that. This is where you have Jordan Peele squaring off with Greta Gerwig.
Yep.
Squaring off with Martin McDonagh.
Mm-hmm.
Who wins?
For me, I think it's going to be Three Billboards. I think it's going to be Martin.
I think so too. We are finally in agreement on something.
Yeah.
I just I think that Peele is considered the front runner. Just because he won the WGL, though, you know, Martin was not eligible for that.
I mean, there are three that I really love. I mean, I love Get Out. I thought Jordan Peele did a great job with that. I thought The Big Sick was great. I loved the screenplay for that. I just think that Billboards is going to take it.
Billboards is a very smart script. It's just very well written.
I'll be just very surprised. I know people are thinking Get Out's going to take some stuff, and I really wish them the best of success.
You think it's going to go home empty-handed?
I think it might go home empty-handed.
All right, so let's talk about Best Picture, then. We're going to wrap up the show right now. Best Picture, tons of drama around it. Five possible winners, really, of the nine. What will take it?
I think it's going to go to Three Billboards. I'd like it to go to Shape of Water.
Wow. So you are predicting a Three Billboards win.
I'm predicting a Three Billboards win.
I heard it here, folks.
That's what I think will win. I personally would like it to be The Shape of Water. That's, if I was voting, that is what I would vote for. I think it's going to be Three Billboards.
I think I'm with you. I think that if I was voting, I would probably vote for The Shape of Water.
Yeah.
I think, and I think The Shape of Water is the likely front runner. But I think Get Out's going to do it.
Interesting.
I think I have sensed a buzz in town.
Interesting.
Just in terms of when anybody talks about it, they just sort of light up. I think there's a lot of passion behind it. I think that the preferential ballot is going to hurt a movie like Three Billboards, mm-hmm. not necessarily Shape of Water. You know, people talk about all the below-the-line support and how Get Out doesn't really have that. Lady Bird doesn't really have that, you know, with the crafts and the guilds, but... I don't know, man. I think there's something about this movie. I think it's going to age the best.
Get Out was one of my favorite movies of last year, and it's one of the few movies of last year that I've revisited numerous times. You know, I really enjoy that movie, and I always see mm-hmm. new little things in it and experience new little things every single time I watch it. I just don't know, but
it could
to be
a pipe dream. It could be one of those movies like, I can't believe you even thought that was going to win.
But I think one of the criticisms, it would calm and it would inflame two big criticisms of the Oscars. One,
whenever a film ends, fucking nobody's seen those movies.
That's the elitist thing for the Oscars. I think if it was a popular, successful movie that actually won, I think it might get people going, oh, the Oscars are actually a bit more normal people rather than just industry. But also then I think my worst case fear is the fact that if Get Out wins, then those same people are going, oh, it's political, it's because it's about white people and black people. And that to me is like, that's just going to continue this perpetual thing of like, the Oscars is only political. It is only a social action thing. But I love Get Out. If that wins, I will be absolutely delighted for everybody involved.
I think it's going to be a fun show on Sunday.
I think it is.
It's going to be, we're both kind of out on a limb with our predictions. Neither one of us is predicting The Shape of Water, which is very unusual. All the trades went with Shape of Water.
I would love that.
So we'll see, buddy.
I think it'll be Three Billboards.
We will see.
I'm going to be there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to be there.
You're going to be in the ceremony?
I'm not going to be in the ceremony. I'm going to be red carpet.
Press room or? Oh, okay.
Red carpet. And then I'm going to be. Going to be working on that stuff afterwards.
For who? Which outlet?
I'm going to be covering for Reuters this year.
Very cool.
Yeah. Already done it for a load of other outlets so far this year, and I'm doing the Spirits for E! Tomorrow.
I'll be on
the red carpet there.
Oh, the Spirit Awards.
Doing the Spirit Awards.
Swanky.
Yeah, so, seriously, you can watch that
on the
online.
In the rain.
Living the dream. So seriously, you can watch the Spirit Awards. They're always really good, and the hosts are great again this year. Nick Kroll's going to be double-heading on that. It's really worth checking it out. So do go to the Spirit Awards website, Film Independent, and you can watch that online tomorrow, Saturday. It'll be Pacific time. It's obviously late in other territories. But do check it out. It's a really, really good show. And we're going to see a lot of people who are nominated on Sunday walking home with awards on Saturday. There's a big, big overlap this year.
When does my interview with Al Jazeera go up?
That'll go out, I think, on Sunday. It'll go out a few times on Sunday. I'll send you a link. Don't worry. We'll post it.
Great.
We'll
okay. Well, then, Simon, where can the good folks find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Showbiz Simon. I also have a Facebook page. This is Simon Thompson. Don't forget, Dark Crystal is in theatres on Sunday and Tuesday. 4K restoration. I've got an interview with Lisa Henson, the CEO of the Henson Company, on Forbes. Also, I spoke to Alexander Desplat this week about Shape of Water on Forbes. You can check that out, too.
If you want to win your Oscar pool, check out my Oscar predictions later today on the tracking board. I've been stalling all week trying to just see what's out there.
Yeah.
I'm Jeff Snyder, editor-in-chief of the tracking board.
No show next week.
No show next week.
No
We're
show
both,
next week.
Off on vacation. So we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Thank you for watching the Popcorn Talk Network. Make
Thank
sure
you.
To rate, comment, subscribe, tell your friends. Tell people you hate.
Yeah. Just to piss them off.
Yeah, and I'm at the Ian Snyder on Twitter and Instagram. Folks, have a wonderful Oscars weekend.
Yep. Be safe.
Get out or go home.
Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.